we'll end with it. Good, good material in this last book of the New Testament. Chapter 21, verses 7 through 8. The one who overcomes will inherit these things, and I will be his God, and he will be my son. But for the cowardly and unbelieving and abominable and murderers and sexually immoral persons and sorcerers and idolaters and all liars, their part will be in the lake that burns with fire and brimstone, which is the second death. This is not a favorite verse of a lot of people. These two verses really can be entitled, Who's Going to Hell? And again, I realize that's not a good foot to start out on, but I don't know, when you read this, cowardly, unbelieving, abominable, murderers, sexually immoral persons, and so forth, and the lake that burns with fire and brimstone, that's about it. That's just about it. Those mentioned in these two verses are not going to go to heaven. But look how this list starts out. Before Jesus gets to the abominable and murderers and sexually immoral and sorcerers and all of that, he begins with a couple of words that describe groups of people that we don't normally put as going to hell group. The cowardly. Those who lack courage. In the background of the Revelation, when it was written, there was a great force, and whether it was the Jews or the Romans, it doesn't matter. Doesn't matter at all who the enemy was. But they were battling a great enemy at this time. And it took a great deal of courage to stand against the enemy. The word unbelieving, of course, has to do with faith. Those who are faithless. You take these two terms together, and Jesus is saying that if I don't have a strong faith, and if I don't have as strong a courage to battle the culture, to battle all of the forces of evil, then I will go to hell along with the abominable and the murderers and the sexually immoral and so forth. Sobering words for those who say that Jesus never did speak anything but love. He was always kind and gentle. This is Jesus speaking. And this is what he said. Those who lack courage and those who lack faith will spend eternity with this sorry group of people that are mentioned in the rest of these verses. The courage that it takes to become a Christian and to be a Christian comes from faith. Now, I'm not trying to be doom and gloom here this morning, but I'm not going to live long enough to see where this culture is taking this country. I'm beginning to see enough right now. And if I live another 3 or 4 years or 3 or 4 minutes, I'm going to see a lot of bad stuff in our country that I'd never, ever thought I would see. We're beginning to see enough of it right now. These young people here, they're going to see things and they're going to experience things over the next coming years that I'm sure I can't even envision what it is. They're going to be called upon to be courageous and to stand against it. And with that courage, they're going to have a faith that is of the first century kind. A strong, strong belief system. And what I want to do this morning is to take a look at the things that they're going to have courage in and faith in. In order for there to be courage, there has to be a belief system that is well grounded in people. And only that belief system will produce the kind of courage that it's going to take to face the evil, evil, corrupt, perverted people that are moving to the forefront and setting political policy, social policy, that is going to ruin this country. Let's begin with Romans chapter 12 and verse 3. Faith in what? The courage to be a Christian comes from faith. Faith in what? Well, we could talk about God and Christ and the Bible. That would be, those were obvious things, but I want to go a different route this morning and acknowledge, obviously, faith in God and Christ and the Bible. But look at some other things that we must have faith in. And first of all, we must have faith in ourselves. And what I mean by that is we need to have faith in ourselves that we can do anything that God calls upon us to do. Look in Romans 12 and verse 3. For through the grace given to me, Paul says, I say to everyone among you not to think more highly of himself than he ought to think. Now we use this verse, and I think appropriately so, to warn against egotism, narcissism. That's right. This verse can be used and should be used to warn against people who think more highly of themselves than they ought to think. But notice how Paul ended that phrase, than he ought to think. The word ought denotes responsibility. Let me ask you, ought I to think highly of myself? Let me just get sort of personal here in this congregation. We have three men who are serving as elders. Ought they to think highly of themselves? Absolutely. I hope they are, because they have a tremendous responsibility in leading and caring for and guiding this group of saints. I hope on a frequent basis they think, I can do this. I know what God wants me to do, and I can do this. I can provide the kind of shepherding. I can provide the kind of spiritual food that it takes to help these people go to heaven. I can do this. I hope they think highly of themselves in that sense. Same thing with David. A great speaker, a good student, just as fine a person doing this kind of work that I've ever been around. And I'm not just saying this. I really believe it. I hope that David, from time to time, soberly evaluates his skills, soberly evaluates the job that he has taken upon himself to provide good teaching, good nourishment. I hope that David, in his more sober moments, thinks, I have some skills, which he does. I have abilities, which of course he does. And I'm convinced that I'm able to do the job that I have volunteered to do and to do the kind of work that I have volunteered to do. I hope that these three elders and our evangelists do exactly what Paul said, not to think more highly of themselves than they ought to think, but they ought to think to a degree that, yes, I think highly of myself, and therefore I'm doing the best job that I can possibly do. And the same thing with everybody else in this assembly this morning. Have you ever studied, for instance, we looked this morning earlier in the book of Daniel, one of my favorite books and one of my favorite Old Testament characters. You read through the Old Testament, you come across a man like Daniel, and you read the stories of he and his three friends, and you think, man, I could never do that. I could never be that kind of person. Oh, I wish I could. Unless I misunderstand the Bible, there's no option there. You've got to be like Daniel. You can be like Daniel. You can stand up against the ruler of a country, as Daniel did, and do the things that are recorded in that book. I think he's one of my favorite Old Testament characters. Or you read the story excuse me. You read the story of Abraham. And you read particularly the story of Abraham being called upon to kill his son. And you read that story, and you see that he got to the point, he was going to do it. He was going to put that knife in that boy's chest. And you say, don't think I'd do that. Again, unless I misunderstand Romans chapter 4, you can read that sometime. Unless I misunderstand Romans chapter 4, I'm not going to be able to go to heaven unless I have that kind of faith. That's the whole point of Romans chapter 4. Holding up Abraham as an example of the kind of faith by which we'll be justified. Oh, yeah. You can be a Daniel. You can be an Abraham. You can be a Paul. You can be a Peter and James and all those other greats that we read about in the New Testament and the Old Testament. We can be, and not only can we be like those people, we must be like those people. Courage to be faithful Christians comes from that kind of faith in ourselves. Don't ever be ashamed of the fact to say, yeah, I have Abraham's faith. I can do it. I have Daniel's faith. I can do it. That's the kind of faith that will keep me out of hell and send me to heaven. Courage to be a Christian comes from faith in ourselves. It also comes from faith in other people. Brethren, be ye imitators together of me, and mark them that so walk, even as ye have us for an ensample or example. This point is very closely tied to the previous point. Philippians 3:17 is where that's found. Hebrews 13:7 talks about imitating those who have the rule over us. Interesting words here in Philippians 3:17. The word imitator, our English word imitator, comes from a Greek word from which we get the word mime, M-I-M-E. That's the suffix of pantomime. It means a mimic. somebody who acts out other people. The example I'm going to use here is going to be lost on about 80% of you in the audience. Our young people won't have an idea who I'm talking about when I mention Red Skelton. Anybody remember Red Skelton? Not a lot, but a few. He was a pantomime artist extraordinaire. He entertained on TV back when you could sit your kid in front of a TV and let them watch it and not be afraid of anything they saw or heard. Good days. Paul said, watch me. Brethren, be ye imitators together of me. Watch me. And what you see me do and what you hear me say, you do and you say what I do and what I say. The word mark. We get our English word S-C-O-P-E from that word. Scope. As in telescope, microscope. Having to do with looking intently at something. Very, very carefully. Not taking your eyes off what you're looking at. And then that word example. One of the biggest fears, I served as an elder many years ago, and one of the most sobering things about being an elder to me was Paul saying that elders are to be an example. And what a man does when he becomes an elder, he says, in essence, watch me. Watch me. Listen to me. And what you see me do and what you hear me say, you do it. And you talk that way. That sobered me so much. As a parent, have any of you as parents, and I want to include grandparents in this, you ever told your children, watch the way I live? You ever said to your grandchildren, listen to the way I talk and don't talk. Look at what I do and don't do. I am an example of the kind of person I want you to be. That's not wrong to do. I don't know what I would do without the influence of my two grandfathers and my mom and dad. I don't know. And the older I get, the more I think about things they said and didn't say, things that they did and didn't do. I think, man, luckiest fella in the world. Nah, I shouldn't say luckiest. Most blessed person in the world. If you want these young people to grow up and face the culture that is rapidly coming upon us, they're going to need a faith that can be imitated. They need to have words said that they can repeat. So parents, grandparents, and all older people, the responsibility is clear. The courage to be a Christian, to become a Christian, and remain a Christian, especially in the lives of these young people, will come in large part from what they see and hear in you. And they'll grow up to be those whose lives are imitated themselves. And they'll have the courage to have the faith that it takes. Courage to be a Christian comes from faith that others have in us. This is a great passage. That trip that Paul made to Rome, and you know what he was going to face when he got to Rome, don't you? You know who he was going to stand before, don't you? You ever heard of Nero? What an absolute animal Nero was. I mean that. He was an animal. Paul was going to stand before him. You talk about courage? Wow. And in part, Paul's courage came from faith that's described in Acts 28:15. As Paul was making that journey to Rome, the brethren, when they heard about us, came from Rome, as far as the market of Appius and the three taverns to meet us. And when Paul saw them, he thanked God and took courage. Now, from what I've been able to find out, this market of Appius and the three taverns was not a tourist destination. It was horrible. Flies, all kinds of horrible things, just from a physical standpoint, not a place you'd want to be. From there into Rome was about 30 to 35 miles, again, if my sources are correct. Those brethren in Rome, I doubt that a whole lot of them had chariots. That was kind of a rich person's transportation. They walked. I don't know how long it would take them to walk that. They walked to meet Paul and to give him courage. And it worked. It worked. When you get older, those of you who are in that category, you do a lot of reminiscing. You do a lot of thinking back. And I can remember as a kid growing up in Port Arthur, Texas, older people coming to me, and I don't even know if they knew Acts 28:15. They weren't doing it. I don't know if they were or not because of that passage. I can remember one day at noon, I was in junior high. I was 14, 15. And I went over to a malt shop, what we call back then, to eat at lunch. And I went up to the counter to place my order, and there stood one of the ladies. We called her Sister Viola. She was an old lady, probably 50, 60 years old. Old lady. The Wednesday prior to that, I led one of my first songs. So when I went up to order, Sister Viola looked at me, spoke to me, called me Charles. That was my first name. Called me Charles. Charles, you really did a fine job leading that song the other night. You know what that did to me? I was already a little bit taller than most guys, but I was a whole lot taller as a result. She didn't know it. And I'm sorry that I never did tell her that she gave me courage. That was one of the best things ever said to me. David, you can do it. You're good. That's it. That's all it took. Let me ask you, getting personal, how many of these young people, and I'm talking about myself, how many of these young people, do those of you who are older, how many times have you gone up to them and said, you know, I've watched you, I've watched the way you conduct yourself, you're a fine young person, and you've got a long road ahead of you in service to Christ, and there are going to be some bumps on that road. But I tell you what, because of the job your parents have done and are doing, and because of the job that grandparents are doing, you're going to make it. You're going to do it. You have no idea the kind of courage that puts in these young people. I would encourage you, whoever you are, remember Acts 28:15. When Paul saw those who had come from Rome, he thanked God and he took courage, that he was able to go on and face Nero. Courage to be a Christian comes from faith that others have in us. And courage to be a Christian comes from faith in God's providence. It has taken me a long time, and I'll be 81 next month. It's taken me a long time in that span of time to come to appreciate the providence of God. I can look back over my life and find times when God intervened in my life. I believe with all my heart that God intervened in my life probably a few times when I was a teenager and saved me from getting killed. And I'm not trying to be cute, funny when I say that. I think he saved my life a lot of times. And by all rights, I should have died because of teenage stupidity. But God was there. When I met my wife, God's providence. I'll never change my mind on that until God tells me different. Anything that happened in my life that's good, God in his providence set it up. And young people and older people alike need to believe that as they go out, as they go to school, as they go to work, as they go out among their friends, certainly you have a responsibility to live appropriately and do what's right. But in all of that, just be assured that God in his providence is working over you. In Daniel, the book of Daniel is filled with the providence of God. You're not, none of you, you young people. It's not too early to start praying to God that he will give you a good husband or a good wife. Never is it too young. If you're 10, 11, 12, 13 years old, pray to God. If you haven't already started, start it today. And pray to God that in his wisdom, he will bring someone into your life that will be a fantastic companion for you, that you can go to help, that you can help them go to heaven, and they'll help you get to heaven too. Start praying now. Turn that over to the providence of God, not some dating site. Turn that over to God's providence. Let him do in your life what he's done for many of us in their lives in that regard. Believe that not only does God exist, but that God is active in our lives. The future. I've got to have faith in the future. And courage will come from faith in the future. Now, I know what we a lot of times say, and it's right, from James. Don't boast about tomorrow, because I don't know what tomorrow, what's going to come tomorrow. That's right. We can't boast of the future. But there are a couple of things that I want to suggest to you that's in our future. Every one of us, I know, is in our future. And I want to start with Romans 8, verse 18. I love this passage. For I consider that the suffering of this present time are not worthy to be compared with the glory that is to be revealed to us. For, here's the reason, the anxious longing of the creation waits eagerly for the revealing of the sons of God. Now, Paul makes an interesting statement. Verse 18, the glory that is to be revealed. We'll talk about that more in just a moment. And the anxious longing that we're to have for that glory which is to be revealed. There are some things ahead of us in our lives that are incomparable. They cannot be described. Let's take a look. The word anxious longing Have you ever caught yourself at a football game or just out somewhere, and you caught yourself wanting to see something so bad you did this? You stretched your neck. That's what this word means. You wanted to see what was over there so badly that you would, it doesn't help any to stretch your neck, but that it shows that, yeah, I want to see that. I want to see that. Anxious longing. Glory to be revealed. What are we to be anxiously longing for? You expecting that one? I've heard very few people say, I can't wait to die. Now, there are some, because of what they were suffering, said it. I can't wait to die. Paul did. Philippians 1. He was in that Roman prison that he was headed for in Acts 28. But I am hard pressed from both directions, having the desire to depart and be with Christ. Why, Paul? For that is very much better. He basically said, I can't wait to die. I mean, it would be good for you if I stayed here, but oh, for me, just bring death on. Really? If you ever have somebody say that, don't think they're talking out of their head. Don't think that the medication has got a hold of them and they're just talking weird stuff. No. You find a Christian who says, I'm ready. I want to die. It would be far, far better for me to go on. Why? To depart and be with Christ. Here is the one that I have served all of my life, as long or short as it may be. But I want to be with my Jesus. I want to be with my Lord. I have to have faith that death will be better for me if I have lived as a Christian, and the courage that comes from that kind of faith going to see me through the difficult days that may be ahead for me. First Corinthians 15, something else that's in the future. Verse 50 of chapter 15. Now I say this, brethren, that flesh and blood cannot inherit the kingdom of God. Nor does the perishable inherit the imperishable. Behold, I tell you a mystery. We shall not all sleep. We will not continue in death. But we will all be changed. I've done quite a few funerals in my life. And it's been my experience that when you get to the cemetery, that's where it gets tough. People are putting in the ground a dear friend, a loved one. They don't want to do it. They don't want to say goodbye. To do it. And I've tried to use this passage to comfort them and tell them that there's coming a day when all this cemetery, as big as it is, there's not going to be a tomb occupied. No. These tombs, even the tomb of your loved one or friend or relative, are going to be empty. They're going to be changed into something that I can't even begin to try to comprehend. And what it is something that God has prepared. I may not know what it is, but the fact that God has prepared it is enough for me. The future includes my death. The future also includes my resurrection and a change in that old body that was put in the ground. First John 3, verses 2 and 3. I came across this several years ago. It wasn't the first time I'd read it, but it was the first time it just hit. I don't know if you've read the Bible for years, and one day you read a verse, you say, wow, that verse says that? Well, 1 John 3, beloved, now we are children of God, and it has not appeared as yet what we will be. When that time of resurrection that Paul spoke of in 1 Corinthians 15, when that time comes, it has not been revealed what we will be. We know the most important words in 1 John. Write it down. We know that when he appears, when he returns from heaven, when he appears, now notice what he says is going to happen when Jesus appears. We will be like him because we will see him just as he is. I've read those words over and over. I'm sorry. If you're waiting for me to tell you what those words mean, I can't. What does it mean that we will be like him when we're raised from the dead? What does that mean? I have no idea. What does it mean that we shall see him just as he is? I don't know. I don't have a clue. But I do know by faith that whatever that means, whatever it means that we will be like him, whatever it means that we shall see him as he is, whatever that means, it is bound to be something absolutely, unbelievably good. Are you anxious to be like Jesus in eternity? Are you anxious to see him as he really is when the resurrection comes and when I get to heaven? You talk about a glorious future, to see Jesus and to be like him. It's faith in these things that will give me the courage to be, to do, to talk like, whatever he wants me to be, do, and talk like in this life. If my faith in this kind of future is what it should be, there's not a thing on earth that will scare me. There's not a thing on earth that I can't face with the greatest of courage. That's why Paul could do what he was doing on the road to Rome. And I don't know where your road is going to lead you, where my road is going to lead me. But it could be that at the end of that road, some horrible, horrible things are going to happen. But when it's over, I'll be like Jesus. When it's over, I'm going to be one who sees him as he really is. That's going to make whatever happens on this side of death something that I can deal with. What kind of courage do you have? What kind of faith is produced by the things that we've talked about this morning? If you have the kind of faith that you ought to have to put on your Lord in baptism, and with great courage face the world forever, as how many years you have left on this planet, you have things waiting for you in your future that'll make it everything worthwhile. We encourage you, if you need to put on Jesus as your Lord, be baptized into Christ, and then live a life of faith and courage all of your life, heaven will surely be worth it all. Let's stand and sing.